This podcast is part of the Erotica Podcast Network, which includes the Erotica Podcast, Erotica Sci-Fi and Fantasy, Erotica Loving Wives, and the Spotify podcast Erotica Taboo Podcast for more intense sexual themes. Both the Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions, which opens up bonus content. Links for everything are in the podcast description. This podcast contains mature content and is intended for an adult audience only. It contains explicit words, thoughts, and ideas. The content of all stories is fiction, with any similarities to real people or events being purely coincidental. This podcast is not intended for anything but entertainment of the listener, and if you do not agree with the themes listed in the tags, please do not listen to the story. All characters engaging in sexual relationships or activities are 18 years old or older. This story was found on a free website and brought to audio form here. I did not write and take no credit for this story. Please visit the link in the comments to further support this author. Insurrection by Black Randall, 1958. In time, every successful revolution puts on the robes of the tyrant it has deposed. Barbara Tuchman said that. I suspect she's correct. I never dreamed I was a tyrant, but I suppose the villains in life seldom realize their roles. They always excuse their actions, as if, somehow, their villainy were acceptable because they are the ones doing it. Standards of things, like honesty, fair play, selflessness, which they demand from others, they have no regard for in themselves. If you lie to them, treat them unfairly, show no regard for them, they complain bitterly, but let the shoe be on the other foot, and it's just peachy. I wasn't always a villain. In fact, few people of my acquaintance seemed to realize that I was a villain. My wife and my two daughters were the ones who cast me in that role. Somehow, in an Orwellian twist, objecting to lying and cheating became tyrannical. After the insurrection, my wife became the tyrant. My wife was Amber. She was a tall, dark-complected beauty. I wasn't not sure of her ancestry. She and her mother claim Native American bloodlines, but everyone does. She has more of a Mediterranean look to me. My name is Cabric North. I have no idea where my parents found that name, or what my ancestry was, either. Everyone calls me Cab. My two daughters are Daisy and Tobe. Daisy was 15 and Tobe was 13. The first sign of my new role came as we lay in bed on a Saturday night. Amber had just finished fucking me into exhaustion. I was spooning her, holding one big brown breast cupped in the palm of my hand and her fantastic ass pushed into my softening cock. She turned her head to look at me and I drowned in her huge brown eyes. Cab, she said. The girls at work asked me go to a lodge with them next weekend and scrapbook. Would you mind? Actually, I did mind, but not very much. I had tickets to a baseball game and I had intended to take her and the girls. I hadn't mentioned anything to them yet. It was just spring training, so it wasn't a big deal. No, I know you like that kind of thing, I said. Go and have a good time. You've been wanting to catch up on getting our pictures organized. Not a villain, right? This was the beginning of my ascent to the tyrant's throne, although I had no idea at the time. She went, and came back very happy. She had made 3 new albums of our family pictures, all decorated up with things she liked. She was very proud of them. I admired them for the requisite time and forgot about it. The next month, she went again. After 6 months, it became twice a month and this escalated over a year's time to once a week. None of this was a problem until Bianca, one of Amber's friends from work, saw me in the grocery store. She asked me why I never came with Amber. Well, I have very little interest in scrapbooking, I told her. Anyway, I've never been invited. She looked at me funny. We only scrapbook once a month, she said. The rest of the time we go out for drinks and dancing. Jeremy always comes with me. You should come. It'd be fun. Jeremy was her husband. Who knew? I had never heard one word about drinks and dancing. As far as I knew, it was all about making pretty books. I hadn't checked to see what Amber's scrapbooks were looking like, because as I said, I had very little interest in scrapbooks, none, in fact. We obviously needed to have a talk. I went straight home. Amber was out, and Daisy wanted to talk to me. Her boyfriend had asked her to go to a concert. She went places with him when they were part of a group. I had major qualms about a 15-year-old girl going to a concert alone with her 17-year-old boyfriend. I told her she could go if other friends went with them. My rule was that she couldn't date alone until she was old enough to drive. I explained this for the 1,000th time, and she went off in a huff. God, Daddy, you're such a freaking tyrant, she said in a parting shot. I was adapting to my new role. This was the first time I was made aware of my lofty position. She didn't speak to me for 3 days. When Amber got home, I cornered her. I saw Bianca at the grocery store, and she asked me if I was coming to your next drinks and dancing, /scrapbooking event. I said. Amber's face flushed, and she immediately took a defensive attitude. I've been meaning to ask you, she said. I guess it just slipped your mind, I said. It must have been difficult to remember to mention that scrapbooking had morphed into drinking and dancing. I completely understand. They are so similar in nature that you just forgot. Well, no problem. We husbands are rarely interested in their wives drinking and dancing anyway. Is there anything else you've been meaning to tell me? There's no need for the sarcasm, she snapped back. I don't have to tell you what I'm doing every minute of the day. No, I suppose you're right, I said. Typically, though, people seem to think it's important for their spouse to know where they are, just in case of emergencies, you know. Jeremy seems to know Bianca is dancing and drinking. She even told me he goes with her. Can you imagine that? I can't imagine any man wanting to be with his wife while she was drinking and dancing, can you? She flushed even more. You know you don't care anything about dancing, she said. This is just a girl thing. Jeremy's a girl? I asked. I had no idea. He doesn't set my gaydar off at all. It must be getting defective. When did he switch teams? Don't be stupid, she said. He isn't gay. He just likes to be there to make sure Bianca doesn't get in over her head. Strange man, I said. Do any other husbands share his paranoia? None of the other husbands know what we do, she said. So Bianca is the only honest woman in the group? I asked. Nice set of friends you have there, Amber. You don't know them, and I don't appreciate you making snide remarks about my friends, she said. None of the other husbands try to be a dictator like you. No one is being dishonest. You mean other than you? I said. Maybe the others aren't married. How can you accuse me of being dishonest? She was ready to explode. I never lied about anything. No, I suppose you're right, I said. I apologize. What I meant to say was that she's the only one in the group that isn't a deceitful bitch. Amber looked at me as if I'd slapped her and stormed off upstairs. Dinner was a little strained that evening. With two of them not speaking to me, it was very awkward. I can do awkward. I went and watched a basketball game before going upstairs. Amber was already in bed, and the bedroom door was locked. I got the little round key down off the door jamb and unlocked it, replaced the key and went in. She was lying on the bed, and she raised her head when I opened the door. Get out, she said. You're sleeping on the couch. I ignored her and got clean underwear out of my drawer. I'm not sleeping with you, she said. It's going to be a long time before you get back in here. I ignored her and got in the shower. When I was through, I went and got in bed. She sat up. I told you you're not sleeping here, she snarled. Get out. I don't need your permission to sleep in my own bed, I told her. If you don't like it, you go sleep on the couch. I think she was shocked. I've heard men talk about their wives making them sleep on the couch. I always thought it was a metaphor. Apparently, she'd heard the same stories and believed them. Maybe she'd heard different stories where men actually go sleep on the couch. Fortunately, I outweighed her by 70 pounds, I was also 4 inches taller, and she would find me tough to drag. I guess she thought she could just lock me out of my own bedroom, and I'd be as meek as a lamb. Well, this lamb was becoming a lion. That's what we tyrants do. We refuse to cooperate in our own deposition. She was spitting mad. She got up, grabbed her pillow, and rummaged around in the chest for a blanket. She was gone in a few minutes, and I got a good night's sleep. When I went to work the next morning, she was up and looking tired. I guess the couch wasn't all that good a bed. I never liked the thing, even as a place to sit. It had 100 stupid pillows on it, and it was very uncomfortable as a chair, much less a bed. When I came home, I went upstairs to change and discovered that everything I owned was missing. I looked around and discovered that she had cleaned out her scrapbooking supplies and that room had become a bedroom. All my things were in there. There was a daybed in there, and I guess she thought I was going to sleep on it. I wasn't. I moved my things back into my bedroom. Amber came up and saw me carrying suits down the hall to our bedroom. What are you doing? She asked. I cleaned out the spare room. You're sleeping in there until you apologize to me. No, I'm not, I told her. Let's see you make me sleep in there. If anyone's moving in there, it's going to be you. Do you want to divorce Amber? Is that what you're angling for here? She looked shocked. What are you talking about? You were rude to me. You called me a lying bitch. Deceitful bitch, I said. It was deceitful bitch. Accuracy is important. Technically, you weren't a lying bitch, just a deceitful one. What the hell is wrong with you, Cab? She said. I'm the mother of your children and your wife. You can't talk to me like that. Why not? I asked. She didn't know what to say for a minute. I'm sure this wasn't going according to plan. I was supposed to come pleading and crawling back, totally ignoring the fact that she was a deceitful bitch. Her mouth opened and closed a few times. You've never spoken to me like that in the whole 17 years we've been married. You were never a deceitful bitch before, I pointed out. Well, not that I know of. Maybe you were and I just didn't know. So, do you want a divorce? No, I don't, she said. I want my husband to realize that he can't speak to me like I'm some disobedient schoolgirl. I'm an adult woman and you need to speak to me with respect. Respect is earned, I told her. Deceitful bitches don't get any respect. Since you don't see fit to explain to me how scrapbooking became drinking and dancing, how you allowed it to slip your mind that you should mention this to me and you don't appear to be at all embarrassed by your early onset Alzheimer's, it seems clear to me that you do want a divorce. Then you won't have to worry about these lapses of memory anymore. You're blowing this way out of proportion, she said. Apparently, she believed that a good offense was the best defense, because she went on the attack. Why did you tell Daisy that she couldn't go to the concert? I didn't tell her that, I said. Remember, accuracy is important. Words mean things, Amber. Well, what did you say? She asked. I told her she couldn't go alone with her boyfriend, I said. If they are going with a group of friends, I'm fine with it. She doesn't date alone until she can drive. You helped me decide that rule. Well, I changed my mind. I told her she could go, she said. Okay, I'll speak to an attorney Monday, I said. I turned away and went down to the den. She followed me, yelling the whole time, but I wasn't listening. I turned on the game and ignored her. She eventually gave up and went somewhere. At this point, I really didn't give a damn where, Daisy came in after a bit and gave me a smug little smirk. I would have to do something about that. Evidently, Tobe had been regaled with tales of my tyranny, and she wasn't speaking to me, either. That suited my mood just fine. I went fishing Saturday, and Sunday I went to a boat show. Amber had seemingly accepted her defeat and moved into the spare bedroom herself. I slept well, enjoying the room and the bed to sprawl out wherever I wanted. I took the day off on Monday and visited my attorney. You can do things like that when you're a tyrant and own the company. I had him begin divorce proceedings, and he promised to have the papers served at our house on the following Monday. I then got on Ticketmaster and bought a ticket to the concert where Daisy was staging her insurrection. I made the usual arrangements to separate our finances and had a pretty good week. Tobe had a band concert on Friday. She still wasn't speaking to me, so I went to a movie I had been wanting to see. I went to bed around midnight, and Amber still wasn't home. The girls shut themselves in their rooms and I played video games and then went to bed. The next evening, Daisy got ready and left for the concert, and I left 10 minutes later. I located her and her boyfriend in the auditorium. I had checked out her ticket number and got a seat directly behind them. The music was as bad as you can imagine, but I had my phone and earphones. Daisy was shocked when she saw me, but I didn't say anything. I could tell she was fuming, and I really enjoyed it. They got up and moved at one point and I ambled along, just staying in eyeshot. I don't think they enjoyed the concert nearly as much as they thought they would. I went home after the concert, and Sunday morning there were three very angry females waiting in ambush in the kitchen when I came downstairs. Luckily, I didn't have to go through the kitchen. I just went through the laundry room and into the garage. I had a tea time, and I just walked by their ambush and played golf. I went to a tool sale afterward and picked up an impact wrench I'd been wanting. When I got home, they heard me come in, but before the ambush could be reassembled, I was in the bedroom with the door locked and a chair under the knob in case they knew about the key thing. They beat on the door and yelled, but I had my handy headphones. Best investment I ever made. I left for work the next morning before they were up. When I got home at 4:30, the ambushes were out in full force. I got a Mountain Dew and went into the den. They swirled around like gnats and I made no attempt to avoid them. I was quite the villain. I had spoiled Daisy's date, failed to attend Tobe's concert, and had seriously hurt Amber's feelings. I felt pretty good. My reign as tyrant was taking off like a rocket. Just before 5, the doorbell rang and I answered it. It was the process server. He looked like a refugee from the Russian mafia. His head was shaved and he had tattoos on his neck, disappearing into the nice suit he was wearing. He looked fierce. I let him in and he did his thing. He appeared to be all out of bubblegum and stuck to kicking ass. The three girls didn't say a word while he was there except for Amber identifying herself. After he left, there was silence for a moment. Amber opened the envelope and her face went white when she saw what was inside. She collapsed on the uncomfortable couch and I sat in my comfortable recliner, drinking my Mountain Dew. "Mom, are you okay?" Tobe asked her. "Who was that guy? What did he give you?" Amber looked at me as if she was seeing me for the first time. "You're divorcing me?" she gasped. "Well, there's the little drinking and dancing thing," I said. "Then there's the moving my things into the spare bedroom, the couch thing, and the letting Daisy go to the concert thing, too. I know where you were Friday night, Amber. You three have had a pretty good life up until now. All I ever asked in return was to be loved and respected. I've given you nearly everything you've ever asked for. In spite of that, there's been this little insurrection going on around here. I love all three of you, but you seem determined to cast me in the role of the villain. I've accepted your assessment, and I'm just acting according to the script. Daisy, I'm wondering how you're going to get that Camaro you wanted when you turn 16. Tobe, I'm pretty sure band camp is out from now on. I don't think your mother can afford those things on her office manager salary. Amber, good luck with the mortgage. Oh yeah, the car payments, the utilities, the club memberships, and your health insurance too. I'll be moving out this week." They stared at me like I was insane. "Where are you going?" Amber croaked out. "Mexico," I said. "I think I can live like a king down there. I'll have maids and servants and a driver. Maybe I'll find a beautiful dusky maiden with a couple of kids who will think I'm just great. I've got it all planned out. It's going to be great. I hope you'll all find someone that makes you happy. Daisy seems to be pretty high on that pimply-faced asshat with whom she went to the concert. Maybe Tobe will do just fine and become a famous musician without all those camps and lessons. Just think, Amber. You can go out drinking and dancing all the time. I'm sure you'll enjoy not being burdened by having to account for where you are every minute of the day. Have nice lives." I went up and got the suitcases I had packed and carried them to the truck. I had to make 3 trips and I guess they were all still in shock, because they didn't move and I didn't hear them say a word. I went and checked into my room at the Hampton, changed, and went down to the pool. I swam laps until I was exhausted, sat in the hot tub until I was somewhat revived, and went back to my room. My phone was making its alert sound and I checked. I had 3 missed calls, all from Amber. She had left 1 voicemail. I listened to it. "Cabrick, we need to talk," she said. "The girls and I want you to come home. Give us a chance to talk to you. You said you loved us. If that's still true, give us a chance. Come home and we'll work things out." Now she wanted to talk. She might even be willing to explain her deceitful bitchiness. I was going to do it, but it would be on my terms. I sent her a text. "Those eggs are scrambled. I was there for the last 17 years. You had a chance to talk. You moved into the spare bedroom, after moving my things in there. This time, you don't have to bother moving them. I took care of that." The phone rang immediately. I didn't answer it and I got 3 texts 5 minutes later. There was one from each of them. Daisy and Tobe just asked me to please not do this and to give them a chance to talk to me. Amber just repeated her. We can work this out, please come home. Mantra. I sent her another text and told her that I'd meet them for breakfast at Iggy's at 8 on Saturday. I knew that would bug them. They all like to sleep until about noon on Saturday. I was a very good tyrant. I discovered I enjoyed inventing petty irritations for my minions. They'd certainly invented enough for me over the last few weeks. I was very busy at work that week. It takes a lot of maneuvering to sell a business. There were a million papers to sign and meetings to attend. I got it done. Talbot Manufacturing had been making me offers for years. I got the papers all signed and the money was deposited in my account in Boca del Rio. Yes, I really was going to Mexico. I spoke fluent Spanish, and I had some expatriate friends who had been telling me how great it was there. I was a wealthy man and Amber wasn't going to get any of it without my permission. That's the way good tyrants operate. I had my bags packed and my ticket in my jacket pocket when I sat down at the restaurant. They showed up in about 10 minutes and slid into the booth, Amber beside me and the girls across from me. I had my briefcase and all the documents I needed in it. They wanted to begin talking right away, but I made them wait until after we ordered. We tyrants are grouchy before our morning coffee. Our food came and we talked while we ate. Daisy spoke first. Daddy, you've been almost impossible to live with lately. You're such a control freak. You made me so mad that I just went over the top. I'm sorry. I do respect you and I'm grateful for everything you do for us. I'm just not a baby anymore and you've got to let me make my own decisions. Me too. Tobe chimed in. I feel the same way. We love you, Daddy, but we're growing up and you just can't control our lives anymore. I'm sorry I didn't speak to you. Alrighty then. I smiled at them. Thank you for the apology. I want to apologize too. Amber said. I should have told you about the girls' nights. It was just some harmless girls' fun. I didn't think you'd care. Well, it's very nice of you to apologize, Amber. I said. The problem is, that balloon is out of air. What do you mean? She stammered. I told you what it was and I'm sorry I didn't tell you when it started.
I opened my briefcase and slid the pictures over in front of her. They were nice pictures, very graphic. They showed Amber and two of her girlfriends being gang-banged at one of the girlfriends' houses. Amber had one cock in her from behind and another one in her mouth. It was hard to tell if the cock behind her was in her ass or in her pussy. It might have been harmless to you. I told her. Unless, of course, you have some social disease. I'm clean, by the way. The doctor was positive. Maybe you should think about getting checked. It doesn't look like your fuck buddies were wearing condoms. I don't think it was harmless to me. Her jaw dropped. I saw Daisy and Tobe crane their necks around to get a look. Amber snatched the pictures up and turned them face down. How, oh God, you weren't supposed. How did you get those pictures, Cabrick? Do you really think that matters? I asked. If it helps you, I told you I was going to speak to an attorney. The attorney hired a detective. He followed you last Friday. I'm sorry, you weren't supposed to know, Cab. She was crying now. It was just some excitement. You know I was a virgin when we got married. I just didn't want to wonder the rest of my life if I was missing out. It was never supposed to affect us. It didn't hurt you if you didn't know. I didn't want to live my life and regret never knowing. I never meant for you to know. I was only going to do it once. You've got to believe me, Cab. No, I don't. I said. Where do people come up with the idea that what you don't know doesn't hurt you? If your coronary arteries are blocked and you don't know, does the heart attack hurt you? If you have cancer and you don't know, is it hurting you? Your little escapades were a cancer, eating away at the vitals of our marriage, Amber. The cancer doesn't hurt you until you die from it. That's what you did to our marriage. You killed it. You didn't want to live with not knowing what it was like to fuck other men? Well, I don't want to live my life not knowing what it would be like to have $100 million. Does that make it okay to rob Fort Knox? You wouldn't mind helping me with that, would you, Amber? That's the biggest load of shit I've ever seen shoveled. She got up and ran sobbing from the restaurant. Tobe looked over at me. I can't believe you did that. She said. I guess you don't have enough faith. I told her. How disappointing. Faith will set you free. No, wait, it's the truth that sets you free. Forgive my mangling of the metaphor. They looked at me as if I was nuts. Well, we tyrants aren't known for our mental stability. They just sat there. Daisy opened her mouth but nothing came out. She cleared her throat. That was so mean. She said. I think your ride is leaving. I told them. I wouldn't want you to be stuck here with someone mean. You better scoot. They scooted. I paid the check and drove to the airport. An hour later, I was flying the friendly skies on my way to the rest of my life. I had many regrets. I couldn't see how I could have stopped anything that had happened, though. I'd been happy, satisfied and proud for 16 years. It had all gone to shit. I felt lonely and depressed. I did what I always do when I feel depressed. I took a nap. It was a long nap and by the time I woke up, we were an hour out of Heroica Veracruz. I sat and ruminated. Amber was on her own. She'd made her bed of lies and she'd have to sleep in it. The girls, well, they were just girls. I'd see to it that they got what they needed. My attorney would take care of money arrangements. If they wanted to see me, I'd make that happen. If they didn't, they had their mother. For what she was worth, it took about 6 months for Tobe to try to get in touch with me. My attorney called me and I called the house. Daisy answered, and I asked to speak to Tobe. I don't think Daisy recognized my voice.
Hi, baby,
I said when I heard Tobe's voice.
Daddy? Is that you?
She began to cry.
Daddy, I'm so sorry. Please, Daddy, I'm so sorry. I need you.
Mom is a mess. She drinks all the time and she spends all her time running around with men and her friends from work. I think she's doing drugs. The only good thing that's happened to us since you left, no, since we drove you away, was when you paid for me to go to band camp. Daisy is being a slut and I can't stand it here anymore. Please, Daddy, I need you. Do you still love me? I was so mean to you, but I hope you still love me. I'm so sorry I treated you like that. I know it was all Mom's fault.
Well, it was partly mine too.
I need you, Dad. I know I didn't have your back, but I'm praying that you still love me.
Of course I still love you, Tobe, I said. I just don't know what I can do. I can't come there. Your mother would probably have me arrested.
Can I come to you? She asked.
I don't see how, I said. Your mother won't let you come here. I'd be glad to see you, but I just don't see how.
If you send me the money, I'll run away, she said. She'll never notice until I'm with you. I hardly see her, and when I do, she's mean to me.
She hates me, Dad.
I can't believe she hates you, I told her. She'll wise up eventually.
Why do you say she hates you?
I got a bad grade at school and she yelled at me. Her voice was shaking. I told her she had no room to say anything to me after she drove the only good thing in our lives away. She sobbed. She slapped me and told me I was a brat, and she wasn't going to put up with any shit from me. She was drunk or high, I think.
Daddy, I'm so sorry. I just let them convince me that you were some kind of evil dictator. I see how wrong I was. Please help me.
Okay, baby, calm down, I said. I'll work something out. Minors can't travel alone without their parents' permission, especially out of the country. Let me see if I can work something out. Call me tomorrow and I'll see what's possible, okay? I gave her my phone number, and she calmed down. She told me she loved me and we ended the call. I called my attorney and he told me she needed a passport, but that was it as far as the Mexican authorities were concerned. It might be useful for her to have a signed letter of consent from me, allowing her to travel unaccompanied. I knew she had a passport because we had gone to France the year before. I faxed him the letter and made the travel arrangements. Somehow, my benevolent dictatorship now seemed attractive to Tobe. I was being rehabilitated, and Amber had taken my place as chief tyrant. One of her oppressed subjects was about to vote with her feet. I felt positively benign. When Tobe called the next day, I had it all in hand. She was going to tell her mother and sister that she was spending the weekend with a friend. She was going to catch a cab to the airport and board her flight. I would pick her up at the airport, and we'd see where we went from there. I'd thought about having my attorney pick her up, but that would have made him an accessory and I didn't want to expose him to that. I was sure that Amber would be very vindictive if she got the chance. When Tobe came down the ramp, I was waiting for her. She flew across the tarmac and threw herself on me, sobbing and laughing at the same time. I swung her around and set her down.
Let me look at you, baby, I said.
God, you've grown like a weed. You're more beautiful than ever. She was, too. She had her mother's dark skin and huge brown eyes. She was starting to fill out in some woman curves and she was gorgeous. She was mine, too, and I could see that shining in the wet pools of her eyes.
You look good, Daddy, she said. You've lost some weight, and you have a great tan.
She pressed herself against me. I've missed you so much. Do you still love me?
Of course I do, I said.
I never stopped. I hope someday I'd have the chance to show you. You kind of weren't letting me do that.
I know, and I'm so sorry, she said.
If you let me, I'm going to show you how much you mean to me.
I was wrong, Dad. I don't know what was wrong with me.
It's okay, I told her. We're going to be fine.
Is Daisy okay?
She was very sober.
I don't think so.
She's sort of acting like Mom. I think she's having sex with that Ash, that jerk she's dating. She looked at me to see how I was going to react to her slip of the tongue that I laughed.
He is an asshole.
I don't mind you using descriptive words, Tobe. Girls shouldn't use a lot of bad language, though. It just makes you seem vulgar and cheap. You can say anything you want to if it's just us, okay? She hugged me again. I took her hand and we walked to the car. She loved the house. I showed her her bedroom and she loved that, too. We sat and talked until 2 a.m. She caught me up on her life and I caught her up on mine. We talked about what she wanted to do and she wanted to stay with me permanently. That made my year. I had no idea what to expect from Amber, but I knew there wasn't a lot she would be able to do. She didn't know where I was and things are a bit different in Mexico. There's very little of the spying and locating that the US government is able to do. As long as you keep your nose clean, there is really very little that you can't do. Money buys nearly everything. Short of me committing a major crime and being caught, Amber would never find us. I don't think she even tried. Tobe had mailed her a letter from the airport, explaining why and where she was going. I never heard anything from her. It took another year before we heard anything at all from either Amber or Daisy. Tobe was in school and doing well. She was speaking Spanish like a native and with her coloring, she really fit in. Then, my attorney sent me an email. Daisy wanted to speak to me. I had him get her one of those cheap phones with prepaid minutes on it. I arranged a time when she could talk without Amber knowing, and I called her. She knew who it was when she answered. No one else had that number. Our conversation didn't begin well. She was crying so much I couldn't understand a word she was saying. That went on for a while. Finally, she calmed down enough that I could understand her, and the words came tumbling out. She was pregnant. When she told me that, we went through the crying thing again. I was uncertain what a tyrant's response should be. I knew what a father's response was. The little girl that I had loved all her life was in trouble. There was no way I was going to let her face that alone. "What are you going to do, Daisy?" I asked her. "What does your mom think?" "She thinks I'm an idiot," she said bitterly. "She wouldn't let me get on birth control. I always use condoms, Dad. I guess one must have broken or something. I was stupid." "What about the baby's father?" I asked her. "He bailed on me the minute I told him," she said. "Dad, I don't even have health insurance. Mom never bothered to sign me up. I'm 17 years old, I'm pregnant, and my life is over." "Your life isn't over," I told her. "It's complicated, but you're going to be okay. Do you want the baby, Daisy?" "No, Dad, I don't," she wept. "I don't want to bring a baby into this world with that douchebag's genes." "Are you going to get an abortion?" I asked. "I want to," she said. "I don't have a clue how to go about it, and I can't afford it anyway. Dad, can I come to you? I know Tobe is with you. Will you give me another chance?"
"Yes, baby," I said.
"You're my little girl, and I'll always give you another chance. All you have to do is ask."
"I'm asking, Dad," she said.
"I'm begging. God, I've been so stupid and such a child. I'm having to grow up really fast. I know what I did to you was wrong, Daddy. I'm so sorry. I should have listened to you and not Mom. I just wanted my way, and she let me have it for a while. I realize now that she was just using me against you. She's totally about her. I don't know why I didn't see that.
You're very young," I told her.
"It's okay, Daisy. Let's concentrate on the future. Let's fix this problem and then we can tackle everything else, okay?" She sniffled and cried a little more, and I promised to call her the next day to give her the details of what I came up with. Then I had to tell Tobe what was going on. She was a little miffed. "Why does she have to come here and ruin everything?" she said.
"We're perfect, Dad. I don't want her here.
Tobe, she's your sister, she's my daughter, and she's in trouble. Don't you love her? Don't you think we should help her?"
"I used to love her," she said.
"When we were all a family, I loved her. She turned into someone else. She treated me like crap and oh my God. That's what I did to you, isn't it, Daddy? She's just like me." She threw herself on me and clung to me. I just hugged her and stroked that midnight black hair.
"We're over that, baby," I said.
"Yes, she's like you, and we need to help her, just like I needed to help you. I think we'll find out that we have your sister back, just like I found out with you that I had my baby go back.
Dad, you're amazing."
She squeezed me even tighter.
"I'm 15, you know. I'll always be your baby girl, though."
We made the same arrangements for Daisy that I'd made for Tobe. Sunday night we picked her up at the airport. It was very emotional, and the two girls spent a long time mending fences. Daisy didn't look pregnant. I asked her, and it turned out she was only 6 weeks along. She was insistent that she wanted an abortion, so I arranged it at the clinic in Houston. Abortion is mostly illegal in Mexico, so we took a chance and flew to Houston. I'm totally opposed to abortion, but that wasn't my decision to make. If there was ever a case for one, this was it. She was 16 years old, unmarried, dumped by the tool that had knocked her up, and not ready for the responsibility of motherhood. I'd have felt very uncomfortable if the pregnancy had been farther along. We took her in on Friday, and in a week, she was back to her old beautiful, cheerful self. Daisy was the polar opposite of Tobe in looks. She was taller and more willowy, and she has blonde hair. There were a lot of blondes on my side of the family. It took them a week to get their problems worked out, and they were back to the duo that had me wrapped around their fingers since they were babies. My life as the tyrant was over. I never really cared for it anyway. I had been replaced. Amber was now the villain in our piece. I hoped she enjoyed her new role. The insurrection was over. My attorney contacted me and told me that Amber had been harassing him. She wanted to know where the girls were, where I was, what I wanted to do about the divorce, and to let me know she was selling the house before she lost it. I didn't care. We had a good bit of equity in it, and as far as I was concerned, she could keep it. I wasn't looking to punish her, just get away from her. There comes a point in life where you have trouble mustering the energy to be angry and hurt. You just want to be left alone, get on with your life, and put the past in the past. I was at that point. She wanted to talk to me, and she wanted to talk to the girls. She was a deceitful bitch, but I knew she loved her daughters. She had at one point anyway. Now that they weren't objects she could use to hurt me, I hoped they could have some kind of relationship. At first, they wanted nothing to do with her and no part of any plan to speak to her. She wrote them long letters, forwarded to us by our attorney, and she wrote to me, too. I threw mine away, but I know the girls read theirs. It was very hard for me not to open those letters and read them. I guess I have a masochistic streak or something, but I dug the first one out of the trash a dozen times before I finally burned it. You don't just watch a 17-year marriage go down in flames without wondering how it happened. I tortured myself with those letters the first four I got before I realized what I was doing. I got the girls to pick up the mail after that with instructions to just get rid of anything Amber sent to me and not tell me about it. Life was good for me. I had my babies. They were doing well and more loving toward me than they'd ever been. They took care of me. I dated some and even found a few of those dusky maidens that were interested enough in me to become friends with benefits. Amber wrote to the girls once a month for a while, and then it became every week, and even several times a week. She wore them down, and finally they sat me down and had a talk with me. They wanted to call her and talk to her. I didn't object. They wondered if I would listen to the conversation. I had absolutely no desire to do that, but they begged until I agreed. I made them promise not to include me or mention that I was there or listening. They also had to promise not to ask me again. This was a one-time thing, just to make sure everything was on the up and up, and she wasn't trying to manipulate them in any way. They set it up through the attorney to call her on a Thursday night. They had the phone set up on speaker, and I made them block the number so Amber wouldn't have it. If they wanted to speak to her, it was up to them. I didn't want her calling them. Evidently she had done a lot of crow eating in her letters, because they seemed fairly comfortable talking to her. She still apologized a million times. Apparently, she had been in a drug and alcohol treatment facility for a while, and she was in therapy. I hadn't known that. I guess if I had read my letters I would have, but I just didn't have the heart. She wanted to see them, and she begged them to come and visit her. Tobe nixed that idea right away. "There's no way we're ever coming there," she said. "Why not, baby?" Amber asked. "I need to see you." "We don't trust you, Mom," Daisy said. "You probably tried to kidnap us and make us stay there." We could hear the sobs over the phone. "I guess I deserve that," Amber finally managed to say. "I brought that all on myself. It hurts so bad to hear you say that, but I know it's my fault. If you won't come here, can I come there? I need to see you so desperately. I need to hold you and make sure you're okay." "No," Tobe said. "You should have thought of that before you decided to drop a bomb on our family. We don't want you to know where we are. What part of 'we don't trust you, Mom' do you not understand?" There was more crying. "Tobe, you're killing me," Amber finally managed to say. "I know what a bitch I've been. I swear to God I won't make any trouble. My therapist has helped me realize that everything is my fault. I don't blame you or your father. I just want a chance to make it up to you. I'll do anything, make any promise, sign any paper, do whatever it takes just to get one chance to see you and show you how sorry I am. Please, girls, I'm begging you." I grabbed up a notepad and wrote on it, then I held up my hand to get their attention. "Tell her to sign the divorce papers, let it go through, give me legal custody of you and give up any financial claims," I had written. I slid it over to Daisy. She looked at it and nodded before showing it to Tobe. Tobe nodded too, and Daisy told Amber what it was going to take. To my surprise, she jumped all over it. "It's going to take me a while to save up the money," she said. "If the house sells before they foreclose on it, I could come sooner. I'll sign the papers right away. The divorce should be final in 60 days or so. Girls, I hate to ask you, how is your father doing? Is he okay?" I shook my head. "He's fine," Tobe said. "We aren't allowed to talk about him to you. Can you give him a message?" Amber asked. "I've been writing to him, but I don't know if he reads my letters. Just tell him I'm sorry, I love him, and I'm going to try to make it up to him, too."
"Okay, Mom," Daisy said. "I'm not sure he wants to hear anything from you. Just think how wonderful it would have been if you'd had this change of heart before you decided to throw everything away."
There was a wail from the other end of the line, and Daisy looked horrified.
"Mom? I'm sorry I said that. I don't have any moral high ground here myself. Just do what you're supposed to. We'll call you on the second and fourth Friday nights of the month at 6, your time, okay?"
Amber's voice was trembling.
"Yes, that will be fine, girls.
Thank you.
This is going to do me a world of good to be able to talk to you. I'm trying to put my life back together. I have a new job. I just couldn't be around those people anymore. I'm working for the cable TV people."
The rest of the conversation was inane, and I quit listening. They talked for over an hour, just kind of catching up. When they ended the call, the girls came over and stood beside me. I was sitting at the bar with my back to it. They sandwiched me between them and hugged me for a very long time. I put my arms around them. They were tall. How had this happened? I felt good. No longer being the tyrant was a great relief. Heavy is the head that wears the crown and all. Now that I was just a commoner again, I could hug my daughters, take them to dinner and relax with them on the beach until it was too dark to see. It took 6 months for her to get things arranged where she could come. I didn't want her anywhere near our home. The girls suggested Heroica Veracruz, but that was still too close to suit me. We decided on Tampico. We drove up the coast and had a blast. It was just like the road trips were back in the day, except we all spoke Spanish and giggled like lunatics. Well, the girls giggled. I might have giggled once, but 42-year-old men sound undignified while giggling, so I stopped out. We had rented a beachfront condo, and we didn't quite know what to expect from Amber. I wasn't about to leave the girls alone with her. I didn't want to be in the same country with her, much less the same condo, but I really didn't have any choice. I went out and soaked up some rays on the balcony when she knocked on the door. I have no idea of anything they talked about. It wasn't any of my business. She came out after about 3 hours and leaned against the railing.
"Aren't you going to even say anything to me?"
she asked. I leaned my head back and closed my eyes.
"I think you said it all," I told her. "What does that mean? Jesus, Cabrick, haven't you punished me enough?"
I thought she was going to cry.
"No,"
I said.
"No?
Well, what have you got planned this time?" she said.
"I might as well get it over with. I don't have anything planned," I told her. "I've never punished you at all, much less enough. Bothering to plan punishment would imply that I cared enough to expend the energy to plan, Amber.
I don't. I just want you to leave me alone. I get it that the girls need a relationship with their mother. I'm down with that. I'll put up with having to be around you. I'll even be polite, just don't push your luck. You are lucky, by the way. Look at me, Cab. She said. I reluctantly raised my head. She was heartbreakingly gorgeous. That mane of black hair, that creamy brown skin, her almost black eyes and the flash of her white teeth was enough to drive a man wild. Unfortunately, the inside didn't match the exterior.
What?
I said. I'm still me. She said. Remember the woman you fell in love with? Remember the woman you asked to marry you? Yes, I remember her very well and I'm grieving her every day. I told her. You killed her. Big tears rolled down her cheeks as she looked at me. The girls have forgiven me. She said in a breaking voice. Why can't you? That's a good question. I said. Here's the thing, Amber. You lied to me. You were out, doing God knows what with God knows whom. I sure don't. You tricked me and it was easy because I trusted you. I would never have known if I hadn't run into Bianca in the grocery store. You would have let that lie fester between us until it ate us up. When I caught you, instead of showing any sort of regret or contrition, you made me the bad guy. I was a tyrant. I was the one that killed everyone's fun. You turned the girls against me. You tried to kick me out of my own bed. Then you went out and had your little gang bang. I was the cruel guy with control issues. Now you come here, all cleaned up after, again, doing who knows what with who knows whom, and you think I ought to forgive you. You've never once even told me you were wrong or apologized to me. She gasped. I was afraid of that. She said. You haven't been reading my letters, have you? No, Amber, I haven't. I said. I've been trying to move on with my life. You obviously didn't want to be in it, so I gave you what you wanted. You don't know how wrong you are. She said. I want to be in your life more than anything. Well, I guess you got your wish. I said. We happen to have a couple of children together. They seem to want you to be in their lives, so I guess you'll have to be in mine. Don't be so enthusiastic. She gave a bitter laugh. I'm not. I told her. I dreaded coming here. The only reason I did is for them. What are you planning to do, Amber? How long are you staying? What's your plan to try to mend fences with your daughters? I don't plan on going back. She said. The house sold, Cab. We had almost $200,000 in equity. I can live a long time on that down here. I want to be close to the girls. I'm moving to wherever you live. I want to be close to you, too. Hell no. I told her. Amber, if you fuck with us, I'll move off the face of the earth and you'll never hear from us again. The tears continued to roll down her cheeks. The girls are okay with me being here. She said. If you'll just let me see them and be close to them, I won't bother you, Cabrick. Is this some convoluted scheme to get me to take you back? I asked her. I want you to take me back. She said. I don't think that's going to happen, is it? No, it's not. I said. If that's what you have in mind, you should just leave now and let us be happy. That's what you do to people you say you love, you try to make them happy. I do want you and the girls to be happy. She said. I think they'll be happier with me close to them. I wish that was the case with you, but it's not going to happen. Cab, do you think we can be friends? I'm very sorry I behaved the way I did. I'm so sorry I disrespected you like that and hurt you so badly. I tried to explain all that in the letters I wrote you. I'm in a better place in my head now. I'm ready to move on with my life. I hope it can be with you and the girls in it. I don't mean as husband and wife. I'll be whatever you let me be. We can be parents, friends, friends with benefits, whatever you allow me to be. Just don't make it impossible for me to be the girl's mother, okay? I know I deserve anything you do to me. I lied and cheated and I'll regret that for the rest of my life. I'm just asking for some mercy here. Please, Cab? I wasn't feeling merciful. Can you at least tell me why you acted like that, Amber? I've asked myself that question a million times. She said. I just got caught up in what some really bad people I thought were my friends were doing. I rationalized that I loved you, it wasn't hurting you, and that I'd get it out of my system and we'd be fine. I can't imagine now why I thought that. I was drinking way too much, doing some drugs, and I just got stupid. Can I ask you a question? Shoot. I said. What's the part you can't get over? She asked. Is it the sex, the drinking, the drugs? What is it, Cabrick? It's the lies. I said. If you would have come to me and said, Cab, I'm bored with our lives, I want to go dancing and drinking with my friends, I would have probably been hurt, but I wouldn't have minded. I'm a pretty liberal guy, Amber. If you had even told me you wanted to be in a gangbang or have sex with other people, but you still loved me and wanted us to be together forever, I'd have tried to find a way to make that happen in a safe way. I don't know if I could have lived with that, but I'd have tried if you'd asked me to. It's the lies, Amber. It's also the disrespect. You tried to make me the villain. All I ever did was love you and the girls. You tried to lock me out of my own bedroom because you lied to me. It wasn't anything I did. I know all my flaws, but you never gave me a chance. You never once came to me and came clean. You just lied to me and disrespected me. That's what I can't get over. Those tears streaming down her cheeks became a river. I'm so sorry. She whispered. I never meant for it to be like that. I was scared and desperate. I'm so sorry. I should have told you. I should have talked to you. Instead, I just threw everything away. She couldn't go on. She looked so miserable and little and lost. Even tyrants can sometimes show mercy. I got up and held her.
She buried her beautiful, tear-stained face in my chest and just sobbed her heart out.
Amber, you haven't thrown everything away, I told her. The girls want you back in their lives. You have them and they want you. I'll try to forgive you so that we can be the parents they need us to be. We're not getting back together, but if you stay on the straight and narrow, maybe we can be friends.
Have you really thought through moving here?
If it's okay with you, I want to, she said.
Just hold me for a minute, Cab. I'll be okay in a minute.
Okay, we'll just play it by ear, I said. We'll see what happens this weekend. If everything goes well, you can come home with us. You can even stay with us until you get your own place.
Do you want to do that?
She nodded into my chest.
Yes, Cab, I want that more than anything. I'll be good, I promise.
She was, too. The girls were ecstatic. We trooped around Tampico and had a blast. Amber stayed late, and when the girls were ready for bed, she went back to her hotel. She came back first thing in the morning and we had breakfast and spent the day together. On Monday, she showed up with a dozen bags and we squeezed everything into the back of our Escalade. We sang and laughed on the way home and the girls started helping Amber practice her Spanish. She wasn't at all fluent, but she had been around me long enough to pick up some useful phrases and words. The girls and I had a rule. We spoke only English in the house and only Spanish outside the house. That was going to be a struggle for Amber for a while, but she'd get plenty of practice and the sooner she picked up the language, the sooner she'd fit in. After 3 days of staying with us, she asked me to help her find a place. It took a while. If you're an expat, it's always best to live in a neighborhood with other expats. The police watch those neighborhoods better, and there is a lot less crime and violence. We looked off and on for about 3 weeks. The girls asked me if she could just stay with us permanently. I was having none of that, and they gave up right away. It was a Tuesday evening of the fourth week Amber had been there. The girls and Amber were in bed and I had stayed up a little later. I was on my computer, surfing the net, and I felt someone come up behind me. Two brown arms went around my neck from behind and I could smell Amber. I felt two large, firm breasts against my shoulders and the back of my neck.
Whatcha doing? She whispered in my ear.
Looking at hot rods, I said.
Look at that deuce, Amber.
It was bright red with custom flames and I loved it.
Look at that hot girl standing beside it, she said.
I think you're looking at the girls and just using the hot rods as an excuse. I chuckled.
Yeah, you got me.
She stood up and took a couple of steps back.
Look at me, Cab,
she said. I swiveled around in my chair and my breath caught in my throat. She had on one of my old button-up shirts with the tails tied up, leaving her midriff bare. She obviously didn't have a bra on and her nipples were erect and trying to tear through the thin cotton of the shirt. She had a pair of lacy pink panties on down below, and that was it. I could see her little heart-shaped patch of dark curls inside. My mouth went dry. There had never been any question in my mind that Amber was a gorgeous, sexy tiger of a woman.
What are you doing, Amber? I asked. Is this another let's get back together thing?
She stepped forward and took my face between her hands.
No, Cab, no, don't think that. I'm all done with scheming and plotting. This is just Amber, horny as a cat in heat. I haven't been fucked for a long, long time. You haven't been out since I've been here. You must be horny too. Just fuck me, Cabrick. No strings attached. Neither one of us are married. You can fuck anyone you want.
So can I.
Why not each other? You're a fantastic lover, Cab, the best I've ever had. You know I'm tight and hot and horny for you. Take me to bed and fuck me. I'll make it so good for you.
It's the baggage, I said.
Forget about the fucking baggage, she growled. There is no baggage, I'm telling you. This is just a horny guy and a hot girl. I'm hotter than that girl with the hot rod is. Look at me.
She untied the knot in the tails of the shirt and spread it open. She was hotter. Those big, luscious breasts bounced and her brown nipples were as hard as I'd ever seen them. Something else was hard, too.
What the hell?
I hadn't been to bed with a woman for a while and she was definitely all woman. She could see it in my eyes. She stepped forward and knelt between my legs, her hands pulling at the drawstring of my shorts. She tugged on them and I raised my butt so she could get them down. My underwear went with them and those puffy lips were sliding down my cock. Amber had always been good at giving head, but she was inspired that night. Her eyes never left my face and I'm sure she could easily see the effect she was having on me. Her lips stretched around me like a vacuum seal and inside her tongue swirled around the head of my cock, scraping against the sensitive area just below the crown with the tip. She worked on me for about 5 minutes and her motion changed. Her hand was working on the portion of my cock that wouldn't fit in her mouth and as she moved her head up and down, that portion got smaller. Her eyes became liquid with unshed tears, glittering like black diamonds. She coughed a little and gagged. Saliva drooled down my shaft, and she backed off a bit, wiping her mouth and catching her breath. She had a look of determination, and she went back to work. This time, she kept pushing, down farther than I'd ever seen a woman take a cock. I could feel the head of my cock against the back of her throat, and she swallowed twice, pushing down, and I felt my cock slip into her throat. She held it there, swallowing convulsively as the muscles of her throat contracted around me. Her nose was touching my belly, and her lips were sealed around the base of my cock. The sight and feeling was too much for any restraint I might have had left, and my legs stiffened as I shot a blast directly into her throat. She swallowed again and backed off so that I could shoot into the hot cavern of her mouth. She never missed a drop, and the blood roared in my ears as I came harder than I ever remember in my life. She kept going until it became almost painful.
I tangled my fingers in that midnight black mane and pulled her head up. She rested it against my belly for a minute.
Jesus, Amber, that was better than I remembered,
I said. She blushed.
I practiced a little right after you left me,
she said.
I'm sorry, Cab.
Hey, don't be, I said. I left you.
You were a free woman. You were always good.
She raised her head.
Can I kiss you, Cab?
I pulled her up.
You can do anything you want,
I said.
You don't have to ask me. I kind of gave you permission when I stuck my cock in your mouth.
She laughed, and it was good to hear. We were becoming comfortable around each other.
I'm still sorry,
she whispered, so low I could hardly hear her. I don't think she intended for me to hear.
You want to take it to the bedroom? I asked.
She looked up at me and nodded. I scooped that tight little body up and carried her into my bedroom.
Your turn,
I told her. I got started. Her breasts were just as big and firm as ever. She didn't seem to age, and they still had that gravity-defying power they'd always had. She was going to age well, like so many dark-skinned women do. I kneaded her breasts up into a point centered on her nipples and captured one with my lips. She moaned rather loudly. I looked up at her.
We're going to have to keep it down, I said. Don't want the girls to hear. I don't know if I can,
she said in a stage whisper.
God, I'm so turned on, Cab. If you touch my pussy, I'm going to explode.
I saw a hand towel I had been meaning to fold and put away on the nightstand. I rolled it up and handed it to her.
Bite on this if you need to, I told her.
She put it beside her head on the pillow and grinned at me.
You know me, don't you?
I went back to those amazing breasts. She had a little bit of a tan line, and it looked very erotic. The darkness of the tan part contrasted a little with the creamy brown of the parts her bikini covered. That was new. She'd always tanned topless when we were married. I guess her new place didn't have the privacy. Her nipples were always very sensitive, and they were as hard as rocks. I sucked and pulled at them until she was writhing and gasping before moving downward. She had a little diamond stud in her belly button. That was new, too, and I liked it. I played with it for a minute, and her hips were making little thrusting motions. I slid those little pink panties down over the roundness of her hips and over her firm, muscular thighs. She had the body of a 20-year-old. She always had. I could smell her as I nuzzled between her thighs, a faint perfume from the soap she used and a little musky odor from her obvious arousal. She was dripping wet. There was a little trickle of girl cum, running down over her perineum toward the brown rosebud of her ass. I licked it up and she shivered. When I thrust my tongue into the darkness of her depths, she began to tremble. Her movements became jerky and I could feel her tension building. I replaced my tongue with my finger, then two fingers, and her tension continued to build. She was gasping and groaning into the towel, her free hand pinching her nipples and squeezing her breasts. I hit her clit with my tongue and it was swollen and erect like I'd never seen it. Her entire body leaped and spasmed and I took the little protrusion between my lips. It was so swollen that I could give it a mini blowjob, my lips moving on it and lashing it with my tongue.
Oh my God!
She moaned into the towel and exploded. It felt like she was having a convulsion, her inner pussy muscles contracting and relaxing on my fingers and her hips bucking wildly, her legs going stiff as she bridged up off the bed. I could see the ridged muscles of her flat belly rippling as she came harder than I'd ever seen her. She was nearly screaming into the towel and I kept her there as long as I could with my lips and tongue working on her clit. When she began to relax, I eased the third finger into her tightness, easing up on her clit, and using my mouth to kiss around that beautiful pussy, biting the cord of her stretched tendons while I curled my middle finger up, finding that rough bundle of nerve ending on the top wall of her pussy. I massaged it rapidly, wiggling the other two fingers against the side walls, and she went into another spasm, crying out her pleasure, her voice muffled by the towel. When she started to come down, I attacked her clit again, and she was explosive. I felt her squirt a little. Once before I'd managed to get her to squirt, and it was amazing. She began to babble words, but I couldn't make them out. She convulsed for a long time and then her hands were pulling on my hair, forcing my face away from her still contracting pussy.
Stop, Cab, she moaned. Please, I need to stop. I can't take any more right now. Come up here and kiss me, please stop.
She twisted frantically in my grasp, trying to dislodge my fingers, and I let her. I slid up over the glorious naked length of her body and kissed her for a long time. My face was wet with her juices and she cleaned it off with her tongue, licking my face like a cat. After a few minutes, I shifted my weight and pressed the head of my cock against her warmth and wetness. She groaned.
Wait, Cab, I'm not ready yet.
Yes, you are,
I told her. I pressed more firmly and felt her open to allow the head to slip into her. She moaned.
Easy. Easy, Cab, you know you're too big for me to go fast.
I don't have a foot-long cock. The length is probably average. I've never gone around looking at other guys' cocks. I'm not a porn star, I know that. I've never had any complaints, though. Amber always told me I was very thick and stretched her painfully unless I went slowly. I'd had that complaint a few times. She felt virgin tight. Evidently, she had been keeping her legs closed like she said she was. I worked slowly into her, and it was like sinking into a hot tube of honey. Wet, sticky and alive with ripples and pulsations calculated to drive a man wild. She was so wet that I should have been able to slide easily, but so tight that I could only move either in or out with difficulty. It obviously hurt her a little for me to sink into her, and it felt like she was going to turn inside out when I withdrew. She moaned at every movement, and I think it took her about 20 strokes to start coming. She arched her back and groaned.
Jesus, Cab, I'm coming.
Fuck me, baby.
It feels so, so good. God, I needed this. Please don't stop. Don't ever stop. Keep fucking me.
Well, I had already come once and I certainly had no place to be. Amber had a spectacular body and she knew how to use every inch of it. She wrapped those long, slender legs around my waist and pulled my face to her luscious breasts.
Take me, Cabric, she said. Make me yours.
I moved within her, making short, deep movements until I felt her begin to tremble. I stopped moving, just holding about halfway into her. She was moving with me when I stopped, and when she felt me stop, she began to thrust frantically, obviously on the verge.
Cab! Don't stop! She gasped. What's wrong? What do you want?
I asked her.
What?
Go, Cab! She thrust even more frantically.
What do you want me to do?
I whispered in her ear.
Don't tease me! She gasped. Give it to me, Cab!
Ask. I told her.
Beg me. Please, Cabric.
She bucked under me, trying to get me to move.
I'm almost there. Fuck me, please, baby. I'm begging, let me come.
Her voice was raising to almost a shriek.
Okay, hold on. I told her.
I drew back until the head of my cock was nearly slipping out and plunged into her, rocking her forward and making her breasts bounce wildly. She immediately screamed into her towel, her body shaking and thrashing as she came, again and again as I pounded into her. When her throbbing, pulsing climax faded, she became limp, just holding on and making weak, tremulous moans. I withdrew suddenly and her eyes flew open.
Turn over, I told her.
She struggled weakly onto her stomach, presenting me with her round, spectacular ass as she pulled her knees under her. I gripped her ankles, pulling her out flat toward me on her belly. I mounted her, and she groaned immediately.
Oh God, oh God.
She moaned as she began to orgasm about the fifth stroke. I pushed deeply and held, her ass mounting beneath my belly as she groaned her way through what must have been at least her fifth orgasm in the last hour. As she began to relax, I began to pound into her, giving her everything I had left.
Oh no!
She cried.
God, Cab, fucking me hard. Oh my God, fuck!
She came again and began sobbing this time.
I'm coming so hard, Cab, please, it's hurting me. Come in me, baby, please come.
You want me to come? I asked her.
Yes, yes, baby, please come. Please come, I can't take it anymore.
She broke out in more groaning sobs and came again. The sight of that beautiful face turned sideways so I could see her profile. Every tendon in her neck taut and her features a mask of ecstasy mixed with a little pain was one of the hottest things I had ever seen. The sound of her, sobbing out her passion sent me over the edge and I unloaded into that sweet pussy, coming with every drop I had left, hearing my own voice join her chorus. I collapsed, on her and in her, and we drew deep, gasping breaths, hers mixed with the occasional sob that I rolled off and she wanted to be cuddled. I held her and stroked that amazing body while she calmed down.
God, I've missed that, Cab, she said. No one has ever made me come like that. Cab, can we do this again? Can we do it often? Please, baby, I need this. I'm begging you. Amber, you told me, no strings attached, remember?
I said. She sat up quickly.
No, that's not what I meant, Cab.
There was a panic creeping into her voice.
I wasn't attaching any strings, I promise. I was just asking. I'm not trying anything. You've got to believe me.
I pulled her back down.
Okay, relax, Amber. I was just making sure we weren't getting confused. Just straight talk here and making sure you don't think this means we're back together and everything's back the way it was.
She sobbed a little.
I know.
She whispered.
I want that, but I know it isn't going to happen. You said we could be friends, though. I wasn't meaning anything more than that. Friends can make love, right? I'll take anything you will give me, Cabric.
Amber, I don't want you wasting your time, hanging around mooning over me. I told her.
Yes, we can be friends. If we're horny, you're a beautiful woman and you're probably the hottest woman in bed in Mexico. We can make love. I think I'll always love you, but we can never be together. I'd spend all my time waiting for the roof to fall in. You say you've changed and I believe you. The problem is, you were this woman once before when I fell in love with you. Then you changed. I'll always wonder if you'll do it again. The next time I'll be 65 or 70 and it will be too late to start my life over again. Both of us need to be looking for situations we want our lives to be in for the rest of our lives, not living in the past. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. She nodded.
I do know, Cab. I'm so sorry that I fucked it up so that it can't be us spending the rest of our lives together. We can be friends the rest of our lives, right? We'll be the girl's parents, and until we find someone else, we can do this, right?
I squeezed her.
Yes, we can do this, but we don't want to give Daisy and Toad the wrong idea. I'm pretty sure they'd hate the idea of us getting back together. They wouldn't respect me and they wouldn't like you. They'd think you were working something underhanded on me. Can I sleep here? She asked. We'll set the alarm and I'll go and get in my bed at 5 a.m.
That's what we did. She got up when the alarm went off and gave me a scorching kiss before her beautiful nakedness slipped quietly out the door. From then until she moved out, 2 weeks later, she slipped into my room after the girls were asleep and tried to kill me with sex. Both of us had always had high libidos, and I had missed that regular sex. Evidently, she had too, because after she moved, she kept coming at least 2 nights a week. She bought a moped rental place, and she was doing a thriving business with the tourists. The girls worked for her on weekends and after school, and they spent tons of time with her. They seemed to have mended their fractured relationship. They told me that she dated from time to time, usually some American tourist. The first time she spent the night after I heard that I got a condom out of the drawer as I was about to enter her.
Why are you doing that? She asked. Don't do that, Kabrick.
I like you bareback. I'm just taking precautions. I told her.
Why?
She asked.
You never have before. I heard you've been dating.
I said, she laughed.
Okay, I get it. I haven't had sex with anyone, Cab. When I do, I'll tell you and then you can wear a condom. I kind of learned my lesson right after you left me. I got something embarrassing. I had to go to the doctor. If I have sex with someone, they'll be wearing a condom. I heard you were dating too. Anything I need to worry about?
No, I haven't had sex with anyone either. I told her.
You fucked me so much I'm not really looking for that in a date. It would have to be someone I fell in love with. I haven't met anyone yet I like better than you.
I told her.
Me either. She said. I'll never find anyone that's as good a lover as you.
I was nuts, Cab. Put that silly condom away and fuck me now. I was happy to oblige that I met Drusilla Consuela Chabala Rios about a year after Amber moved out of our house. Daisy wanted a horse and Drusilla bred horses. They were those black, Spanish horses with the long, flowing manes and tails. She was tall, dark, and aristocratic. She was also lovely, curvy, and oozed sensuality. She had long, glossy black flowing hair like the horses she raised. We met to discuss horses and she fell in love with the girls. Of course, they were easy to love. So was she. We met her for lunch twice. The first was at a restaurant, and the second time was at her home when we actually made the purchase. She spoke English with a delightful accent, and her home was immaculate. The grounds were amazing and the horses were beautiful creatures. I had absolutely no interest in horses. Daisy did, and I was interested in Daisy. I also became rapidly interested in Drusilla. I asked her out for dinner and dancing, and to my surprise, she didn't turn me down. She wasn't wearing a wedding ring when we first met, but you could see that she had worn one for a long time. Her ring finger had that telltale depression. Over dinner and drinks, we exchanged stories. I told her about Amber, and she told me about her ex. He had been quite the playboy when they married and evidently thought he could keep the same lifestyle afterward. He must have been nuts. Anyone that wouldn't have been satisfied with that woman was brain dead. He must have been cock dead, too. I got hard just looking at her and listening to her speak. She took me to a club where she was a member, and we had a wonderful time. She was quite a dancer. That smoking hot body was all over mine, and she had me ready to come in my pants right there on the dance floor. I felt like a kid at the prom. She smelled amazing and she felt even better in my arms. When she turned her back and rubbed her ass against my obvious erection, it was one of the most erotic things I've ever experienced. Amber had a nice ass, but this was spectacular. It was full and jiggly and obviously not contained in panties unless it was a thong. She pulled my hands down onto it during a slow dance and I discovered just how firm it was. Her breasts were large and heavy, barely restrained by the bodice of the red dress she had on. I could see down her deep cleavage, and she had on a red lacy bra in there. We had driven our own cars to the club and when I walked her out to hers, she gave me a kiss that nearly started my hair on fire.
Call me, Kabrick. She said. I had a wonderful time and I'd like to see you again.
We went out a couple of times a week for 2 months before she took it any farther. She'd invited me on a picnic at her place. We walked out into one of her horse pastures to a river that flowed through it. We sat on a blanket under some willow trees and I sat with my back against one. She moved to sit between my legs with her back resting against my chest. I wrapped my arms around her and we sat and just talked for a long time after we ate. She leaned her head back against my shoulder and looked up at me. She had the most exotic almond-shaped brown eyes I'd ever seen. They were shining up at me and she offered me her lips. I was happy to accept and I felt her hands slide down to hold mine around her midsection. She tugged on them a little and I allowed her to move them wherever she wanted. She slid them up over the arch of her ribcage and onto the pillows of her breasts. I could feel her erect nipples through the soft cotton dress she was wearing. I pinched them gently and she moaned into my mouth.
Make love to me, Kabrick. She whispered.
Here? I asked. She giggled.
See, Aqui? No one will see us. We are very secluded.
Well, I was never one to turn down the opportunity of a lifetime. I began to bunch the little cotton sundress she was wearing up toward her hips, enjoying the silken smoothness of her dusky skin and the fullness of her thighs being exposed as the dress inched slowly upward. When I got it to her butt, she raised it and allowed me to move the dress up to just below her breasts. She sat up, and I pulled it over her head, exposing her full glory, and she fluffed her mane of glossy hair before sinking back down to the blanket that I just wanted to look.
God, she was gorgeous.
She hadn't worn either panties or bra. She was as smooth as a baby, the pouting lips of her sex plainly exposed and glistening her arousal. I lay beside her, my head propped up on one elbow, and caressed her spectacular body with my fingertips. She was stunning, all curves and softness and silky brown skin. Her nipples were spiked up, both from her arousal and being exposed to the breeze. They were mouth-watering, so dark brown as to be nearly black. They stood up half an inch from her surrounding areolae, which were about the size of a half dollar and only slightly darker than the skin of her breasts. They were a little crinkled with her excitement, and I had to taste one. I let my hand curl around one firm globe, weighing its heaviness and sinking my fingers into its resilience. The size was more than my hand could wrap around and I have big hands. I made a point, centered on her nipple, and bent my head to take it inside my mouth. She moaned when she felt my lips close around the little nub and I bit it gently. She arched her back and her hands were busy, pulling my shirt up so that she could press her skin against mine. She felt hot, as if she were running a fever. I let her distract me long enough to get my shirt over my head and she worked feverishly at my fly, unbuttoning and unzipping so she could pull my pants down.
"Help me, Kavrick," she breathed. "Please hurry. I am burning up from wanting you. We will play later. I need you and me."
Her eyes widened when she finally got me exposed. Her hot little hand grasped me firmly and pulled me toward her. I was as hard as I'd ever been with this goddess under me in this beautiful setting. I was going to worship at her altar.
"Drew, you're so beautiful," I whispered.
She kissed me with more passion than I've ever felt before.
"Take me," she moaned.
"Go slow, Kavrick. It's been nearly 2 years for me and you are so thick. Don't hurt me, please."
"No, baby, I'll be as gentle as a lamb," I assured her.
"Only at first." She giggled. "Then I wish for you to be fierce. I am a fierce lover and you must join with me." I growled and she laughed, then caught her breath in a gasp as I pressed into her moistness. She was very wet and very hot and I couldn't get in. She bucked her hips into me and the head of my cock slipped in with a popping sensation. She froze and her hands pushed at me.
"Wait, wait," she squealed.
"I cannot.
Wait, Kavrick."
I held still, just the head of my cock soaking in her heat and moisture. I bent and took one firm nipple into my mouth. She moaned and arched her back so that I could have better access. When I felt her begin a slow churning movement, I took that as my signal to advance. I pushed deeper inside her and felt her contract and then loosen, as I finally was able to gain a little depth. She was groaning from somewhere deep in her body and I thought I was hurting her. I may have been a little bit, but when I looked at her face, it was pure ecstasy written there. I backed off and reclaimed the formerly occupied territory. After a half dozen of those strokes I moved deeper and this time there was only slippery heat and tightness around me as I slowly sank fully into her.
"Madre de Dios," she gasped.
"You are so big, Kavrick. You are killing me." I was quite flattered. I felt like a porn star. Obviously, her ex-husband hadn't been overly endowed. She gasped at every slow thrust but she quickly became impatient.
"Fuck me, Kavrick. Go fast.
I need to fuck. Later we can be sweet and slow. Now I need you to make me hot." She urged me with her hands and the motions of her hips and legs. I did my best to keep up and it didn't take either of us 5 minutes to explode. She wailed and did her best to buck me off when she came. Her nails scraped my back and I felt like I was going to black out. I came so hard. This was different than the fuck buddies I'd had before Amber came. This woman was on a whole different planet. She was sultry and fiery and silky soft, all rolled up into one bundle of dynamite. We lay together, letting the breeze cool us and catching our breath. "I am ready for slow and sweet, now," she told me. She pushed me over on my back and explored my body, first with her eyes, then her hands and finally her lips. Those lips were full, pouty and scarlet. They traced the line of my jaw, down my neck and lingered at my nipples.
"You have no hair," she said.
"This is very sexy." I laughed. "Some of us have evolved further than others," I said. She giggled and worked lower, dipping her tongue into my navel before continuing south. "I could have pubic hair, but I choose not to." She liked that too. She lifted my, still sticky, cock and played with it until it began to show signs of returning to life. Then, she stuck out a little pointed tongue and ran it from the base to the tip. It showed definite signs of life then. Her lips formed a perfect cheerio and descended halfway down, applying tremendous suction and then relaxing while her tongue swirled around the sensitive head. I tugged at her leg and saw her roll her eyes toward me. I tugged again and she swung her leg over, giving me access to the most beautiful pussy I'd ever seen. It was smooth and brown, the brown fading to pink on her inner lips and a flushed pink deeper in. It was perfectly formed, her inner labia making a symmetrical line except where it gaped slightly from our earlier activity. The little butt of her clit was begging for my tongue. She was very juicy and leaking cum. I was no stranger to that. God knows I'd done it enough with Amber. As long as it was mine, I wasn't going to freak. If she didn't mind us mixed together on my cock, I wasn't going to complain about it. Besides, she had the most beautiful pussy I'd ever seen. Did I mention that? I dived right in and she smelled divine. I was overwhelmed by her aroma, heady, musky, and all woman. I teased her inner lips and she moaned and thrust against me. Her mouth was working magic on my cock as well. Her mouth was as talented as her pussy, and when she came, I couldn't hold back. I was very surprised at the amount I still had in me, and she bucked and growled around my cock as she came with me. We relaxed for a while and I admired her spectacular body in the fading light. We dressed and made our way back to the house.
"Kavrick, I wish for you to spend the night," she said.
"We must inform Las Camacas," I laughed.
"Okay, you inform them, Drusilla."
She flashed me a brilliant smile and sent the girls a text. It had lots of emojis in it. Her phone buzzed twice and she smiled again when she read the texts.
"They desire pictures," she said.
We laughed, and she dragged me off to bed. I thought I was through for the night, but she convinced me otherwise, and we made love for a very long time. She fed me breakfast the next morning, and we talked for a while.
"Kavrick,"
her huge brown eyes drilled into my soul.
"Do you love me?"
I choked a little on my juice, and she laughed. I loved the sound of that laughter. I didn't answer for a while, just collecting my thoughts. Her eyes continued to twinkle at me. I think she was enjoying my discomfiture.
"Drusilla, my life is very complicated," I told her.
To answer your question, yes, I love you. We've only known each other a few months, but I love everything I've discovered about you. You're drop-dead gorgeous, you're funny, witty, and smart. You're independent and a very good businesswoman. You make love like a volcano. Yes, I love you. I have complications in my life, though. My daughters depend on me and I had them before I met you. That gives me this prior commitment. I understand. She nodded. This is what I would expect from you. Drusilla would be loved, but daughters are loved also. How could it be otherwise? There's also Amber. I said. We're divorced, but we're parents together. I have a commitment to her, as well. Not a romantic commitment, we're divorced and I've told you why. We shared beds before I met you. We haven't done that since our first date, but I need to tell her about us and see what that's going to mean to her. Do you understand? She nodded again. But of course. Do you love her still, Cabrick? Yes, I suppose I do. I admitted. I'm not in love with her, if that's what you mean. We were married for a long time. She genuinely seems to have turned over a new leaf and reverted back to the woman I married. I don't want to throw her into a tailspin. She didn't say anything, but I could see the wheels turning behind those eyes. She seemed satisfied and after a while, she walked me to my car. She gave me a kiss that left me weak-kneed and her eyes were smoldering. I was as lighthearted on the way home as I had been since the insurrection. The girls were all over me the minute I walked in the door. This is so sick nasty. Daisy gushed as he squeezed the life out of me on one side. Tobe was on the other, and I looked a question at her. Yeet, she said. I assumed that was something good. I think they were planning my wedding from that moment on. I was going to have an unpleasant meeting with Amber. I was dreading it. As it turned out, my apprehension was unfounded. I got blindsided. She dropped by 2 days later. She threw herself on me, hugging and kissing me in the entry. I had no idea what was going on. Cab, I'm so happy for you. She was very excited. Drusilla came to see me. I love her, Cab. She's perfect for you. This also makes it so much easier to tell you something I've been avoiding. I've met someone, Cab. Someone. Turned out to be a French expat named Maxime. I called him Max and he didn't seem to mind. He was a genial fellow, I liked him immediately, and he seemed to be very much devoted to Amber. He and the girls shared a friendly tolerance for each other. He seemed amused by them, and they thought he was harmless, but uninspiring. He seemed perfect for Amber, to me, at least. She seemed to love Drusilla and Max was tongue-tied around her. My only problem seemed to be a new insurrection. My girls, my ex-wife and my girlfriend seemed to be in a tight-knit conspiracy to get me married in the smallest amount of time possible. I didn't even remember proposing. I was dragged off ring shopping before I could even catch my breath, and we had a June wedding. Drusilla was a vision and my girls were stunning. Amber directed the whole affair, and we were whisked away in a limousine bound for the airport. Max had arranged for a honeymoon in France where he still owned the house in Nice. I knew I was in for a ride. Drusilla was the stereotypical hot-tempered, emotional and very sensual Latin lover. Not only that, but I realized that there was a new tyrant in town. I thought I'd be happy under her rule. The end. You have been listening to this podcast on the Erotica Podcast Network. Please visit our other podcasts. Their links are in the description of this episode. The Erotica Podcast and the Erotica Taboo Podcast offer $2 subscriptions, which opens up bonus content.